Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I'm honored to share the microphone with the most interesting entrepreneurs. They are authors, they are speakers, they are business owners, they're coaches, they're just people who have wonderful stories to share and who are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they're willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I am chatting with Daryl Lyons, who is the co-founder and CEO of PAC Financial Group, LLC. He has been a licensed professional in the financial services industry since 1999, and he is also a lifelong Texan. He began his career in the financial sector just one day removed from earning his bachelor's degree in corporate financial management and accounting at St. Mary's University. Throughout his career, he has won awards for recruiting and development from Fortune 100 companies, endorsed by two New York Times bestselling authors, Dave Ramsey and Dan Miller, an NBA Hall of Famer, and 16 successful business owners. His business is considered one of the best places to work in San Antonio and one of the fastest growing companies in the city, according to the San Antonio Business Journal. He is also a successful small business entrepreneur and co-founder of radio show Financial Mythbusters. Love that title. He has written a book called Small Business, Big Pressure, a faith-based approach to guide the ambitious entrepreneur. I can't wait to read it. And he also served as the chairman for Brooks Development Authority in San Antonio. Shortly after his service, Mayor Julian Castro named a park the Daryl W. Lyons Park in honor of his service. So be sure to join us in the chat room to ask questions of Daryl or just to make observations about the program. Daryl, I'm so excited to have you here. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on the show today.
Well, you know, we had a pre-interview chat a week or so ago that both of us were like, man, we could have just recorded this and it could have been the radio show. It was fascinating, I have to tell you. What I found out, and I think you actually asked me, just kind of the out of the blue, you know, are you an introvert? And I went, yeah, how did you know? I think we recognize each other. But you know what I'm finding, Daryl? Most people who do what we do, I'm finding that a large proponent of entrepreneurs are introverts. And that's not a study by any means. It's just an observation. So what is your take on that?
Well, I think the medium in which people communicate has changed over the last several years in particular. And so what we're seeing is that people who tend to not enjoy the limelight, the presentation, the Jack Welch type of personalities, they tend to thrive in this new economy where you can use different mediums like podcasts and Facebook and Twitter and all these other resources to express themselves and to bring value to the marketplace without feeling uncomfortable. So it's really neat. The more I get to communicate with people across the globe and get to know their story, I'm recognizing that there's a new breed of leaders that are rising up, and this economy is allowing them to do that through social media.
And I still don't know why you asked me if I was an introvert. I'm going to coin a new word, introvert, which is entrepreneur introvert. I still don't know why you asked me that, but I was like, yeah.
I'm not sure.
It gave me away.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's a good question. You know, I guess you got to, sometimes I just know, just having dialogue with somebody and they tell me a little bit about what they enjoy doing or what they don't enjoy doing, and you kind of tell quickly. You know, I read Susan Cain's book, Quiet, and that was such a reaffirming book for people who tend to be quiet. And And so I got a better picture of what it means to be, and you know, introverted is kind of weird because it's a weird word because it implies a you know, 100% introvert, but it's various degrees that we're introverted in. And so, and it also, that book helped me understand the difference between shy and introverted. It helped me understand my kids who tend to be great leaders, but don't want to be the first one to stand up and talk. And it gave me a lot of confidence. That book was great, but it also helped me have an awareness of the people around me and their character qualities that make up the introverted population. And so I probably caught on to a few clues here and there when I were having a conversation, and just, yeah. I just enjoy that.
You caught on very quickly. I have to say you're very, very perceptive. I mean, it was one, I don't think we were on the phone 3 or 4 minutes when you asked me that, and I went, I'll be darned. There's another one. And I'm finding that we are not alone, which is very, very comforting. And you're right, we're not shy. And I have to explain this to people a lot. We're not shy at all. We just need a lot of alone thinking, regenerating time, a lot. For me, it's a lot of time alone.
It is. You know, some of the greatest leaders in our world have been reserved. And I love studying leadership. I've read 25 biographies of presidents and just the different character qualities of presidents. And not all of them are charismatic. In fact, Jim Collins did a great study in his original work called Built to Last. And in that book, he said it's a fallacy to believe that leaders have to be charismatic. Absolutely not. In fact, the main character quality of a successful business is not a charismatic leader. It's something else. It's a charismatic cause.
Oh, now that makes a lot of sense. See, I would not have thought of that.
Yeah, and I think that's the misconception in that a lot of people believe. And we're seeing that the marketplace is certainly changing and has a new appreciation for a new type of leader. And I'm enjoying participating in that because I'm not one to be charismatic. Now, certainly over time, I've tried to polish up my communication skills. You know, Toastmasters is a great way for me to be able to start sinking my teeth into how to better communicate. And then doing a lot of interviews and reading John Maxwell books on communication. And so I try, just because I've improved my skill doesn't mean I don't get sweaty armpits. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I certainly appreciate communicating, but it's still exhausting. In fact, they asked Condoleezza Rice, said, Condoleezza, why don't you run for president? And she said, here's why. When I go to a party, I see George W. Bush finish that party, and he's energized. When I'm done with the party, I'm exhausted. And so that's kind of telling of somebody's introverted characteristics. And so
right.
I get exhausted, but I still know it's a very important part of the job is to communicate a message and a cause that's important to me.
So how, I mean, you must have known fairly early on that you were an introvert. I'll be honest with you, I didn't know. When I was growing up, I was called all kinds of things, most of them unpleasant. I was called stuck up, aloof, bitchy, because I was just like, leave me alone. Everybody back up 4 steps and leave me alone. And I wasn't sure how to communicate that I desperately needed to be, you know, and I grew up in a big, big house, you know, big family. I was the oldest of a whole mess of kids, and they were loud and noisy and dirty and boisterous, and I hated them, and I couldn't stand it. I mean, I was constantly trying to find somewhere where I could just be by myself with a book. I mean, we all get along fine now, but it was a very difficult childhood for me, and nobody knew it. You know, nobody knew that I was drained by being around these people, any people, all people. And I finally figured it out and went, okay, I'm going to craft a business where I can work from home, I can make a good living, and I don't have to be out in public all the time. I don't do well with it. And thank God for the internet.
It's become just a great medium for people to communicate because, you know, we are still called to be in relationships with one another.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
That's just the right. And so but to the degree of those relationships, we each have a unique wiring. And so, I think it is. It can be frustrating when we're quickly labeled, even especially as children, to say, this person is, you know, stuck up or arrogant, whatever it is, because
that was in there.
Yeah, you know, just because they're just not communicating in that moment. Maybe they're overwhelmed by the stimulus, and those are studies that are shown when babies are born. They test the degree of their reaction to stimulus. And introverts are identified right out of the womb. And so
That's true.
Yeah.
My mother says that from the time I was a tiny infant, she would pick me up and I would push back. I'm like, no, put me down. I mean, I was very, very small and I did not want to be held or bound in any way.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, with my four kids, I see that. And so, yeah, I just want to encourage, parents and children that, these are character qualities that are actually really, really special. And it's just encouraging those character qualities and certainly encouraging that in the environment where there's too much stimulus to recognize that, so there's some basic tools, right? You could breathe, don't hold your breath just because you're nervous and you can't think. And then also be a good listener and ask questions. Sometimes you don't have to necessarily start speaking, but just as an introvert, just be curious about people, and breathing and being curious are two helpful tools that I use.
And I do the same thing. I love to listen to people, and I do enjoy being around people, but I've said this time and time again for about 59 and three-quarter minutes. After that, I've got my keys in my hand. I've got to go. I have to be alone somewhere. It may be the ladies' room, but I've got to go somewhere for a while.
Oh, I get it. I completely get it. A good book for me, and I don't mind just relaxing by myself at all. I'm just fine with that.
So how does this translate into building this enormous business and this following? I mean, there had to have been a point where you understood that, being out in front of everything and everybody is just not for you. So you're I find that introverts, many of us are great leaders, no question about that. But it's something that we have to kind of craft on our own, isn't it?
It is. I think the why has to be big. So the why you're doing something has to be so big that you work through your fears. Let me just give you a basic example. I had this conversation with a client whose son, we had saved money over the last 10 years to help him go to college. And so she was just telling me about the transition he's going in life, his enthusiasm and his nervousness and the cash flows. And it brought up a memory for me that I shared with her that when I was 17 or 18 at the time, going to St. Mary's University, we didn't have much money in my house. And I needed things to be able to survive in the dorm. I needed pillows, I needed blankets, I needed an ironing board, I needed towels. We just didn't have any excess at that time in my house. And so I went to anybody I knew in the community, young or old, and I said, do you have any extra stuff I could use for my dorm room? And I look back now, I go, man, I could. That's crazy that I did that. I'm sure I wasn't comfortable doing it, but my why was so big. College was so important to me, and I knew if I didn't have these things, it would be a difficult experience. So my why was big enough to overcome the fear, and I think that's for introverts. When you have a big enough why, you're going to figure out a way to work within your authentic nature and then figure out a way to communicate with other people. But you have to have a big why.
And honestly, I bet you found that people really do want to help you succeed. When they understood what it was that you were asking for and why you needed it, I'm willing to bet they gave more than you asked for.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. I got some great stuff, and I got some of the junk, the iron that, this is broken anyways. there's a lot of people out there to help. Exactly.
Right.
The great thing about being introverted and having that is that there's an element of humility. I don't remember who wrote this book, but in terms of communication, there's something to be said when you see somebody blush. It shows that they care about the relationship. Or it's okay when somebody has a pimple. It shows that they're human. And so these things make us more human, and it's the ones that are just really crisp and clean. Those are the ones that most people get kind of nervous about. So being an introvert and showing ourselves and just being a little nervous, saying the wrong things at the wrong time, that's actually okay. It's not a big deal. It just makes us human.
And that's when we were having our pre-interview. I said, look, we go live. I don't have the time or the patience. My schedule doesn't permit it. My patience doesn't permit it to massage the interview and tweak it and clean it up. You get us coughs, sneezes, warts, and all, and it makes it a lot more fun.
It does. It does. I do enjoy the live ones. I know I can't can't edit out. I don't really cuss or anything, but I just never really grew up that way. But the thing about the live interviews is if I say something, well, it's out there, you know. Oh well, right? Just deal with it.
I know. It really, people, I think, really do, they get it. They get you, they get me, they really understand it. But you said something a bit ago that was so important, is that we need to speak in our authentic voice. And I think we need to do that whether we're a total extrovert or a total introvert or something in between. And I think this new medium, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of these different things that are now available to us, allows us to be far more authentic than it, when we used to have to be buttoned up and starchy. And we had to present. Remember back in the day when the internet first came around, and people, you know, first started putting out their websites, and people didn't put their picture up. I still don't. I have a camera phobia that is just beyond bizarre. But it's mine, and I own it, and I'm going to keep it. No matter how many people try to cure me of it, it's mine. But, you know, back in the day, these websites would go up, and you'd get the banker pose. Remember that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody standing there in their shirt and their tie with their hand on the grandpa's leather chair, and that was what you got. Well, we're not that anymore, and I think that gives us a level of comfort all the way around, don't you?
I do, yeah. I think it's exciting new platform for people to rise up, express their ideas, provide some leadership, and then also stay in their comfort zone. And I think good and bad, right, to be authentic, but I think we need to, as an introvert, and this is me, I just am always trying to improve my ability to communicate within my own authentic self. And so, but it allows us to at least get started, right? And so I love the medium. In fact, I got to tell you, you know, my wife and I, we met 15 years ago. But I remember our first really authentic form of communication was Yahoo Messenger or whatever it was back then, maybe AOL,
yeah.
Right? Remember it went?
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Yeah. MSM or whatever it was, Messenger.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Mostly it was
those...
me and my mom.
Yeah.
I think my circle was.
Exactly. I think it was me and my wife. And that was our first form of communication because we were both kind of shy. But I tell you what, that worked. And so that's neat. I'm enjoying seeing this. And so Susan Cain has done a good job of really getting out there and encouraging people like you and me to just be ourselves and provide value.
Oh, I've read that book. That has been recommended to me so many times, and it's a great book for people like us.
Yeah.
You know, who, a lot of introverts may not really understand that they're introverts. I didn't for a very long time. And once it dawned on me, I was like, oh, I was so happy. I mean, I was. If I would have had a tail, it would have been wagon. I mean, I was like, oh, there it is. That's me. So, I mean,
right.
It was a relief, I have to tell you, because I kept thinking, man, there is something wrong with me. It's not that I don't like my fellow man. I do. I just don't need to be in constant contact with my fellow man or woman.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And once you're good with that, then you can, yeah, you just enjoy the unique way God made you. And I think that's what we're all
exactly.
looking for.
Exactly. So how did this translate into the enormous business that you've built? Because I know, look, I've walked in your shoes to some degree. I know it's difficult to get out there and just do. So how did, were there any steps that you took that said, or maybe it was your why, how did you do this? I'm very curious how you managed to just get out there and go, oh, I'm going to do this, and here it is.
So, yeah, so I kind of come full circle to the question, and I'll give more detail, but again, my why was big. The cause, and the motivation has changed over the years, but my initial cause was I grew up in an environment where we didn't have much. There was many times we struggled financially. We lived in a little trailer park in Castroville, Texas, my senior year in college, and just my why was I didn't want to have that environment. In fact, there was a running joke I had with my friends that I wanted to always make sure I could pay for school supplies. That was pretty much the extent of my goal in life. And so my why was so big that it didn't matter what I did, I was going to figure out a way to do it. I'll never forget one of my first clients. I was engaging two business owners, and if I hadn't engaged them, I was losing my job because I hadn't produced enough for the company. And it have a certain minimum production requirements for a Fortune 100 company in the first 6 months in order to keep your job. And I, just wasn't a good salesperson because of my unique wiring, and I didn't know that many people. My community and sphere of influence were a few people in a trailer park and some college students. So I didn't have people to go and invest with me or buy financial products, but I did find this business owner who said he needed some life insurance at the time, and he needed it for him and his business partner. So I decided to put together a presentation, and I'll never forget me filling it out and bringing the forms back to the office to turn in to be approved, and they couldn't read the handwriting because my hand was shaking so much. And I was embarrassed, certainly embarrassed by my nervousness. But I just had to get over it. Honestly, I couldn't dwell on it. I didn't like it. But my why was so big that I had to figure out a way to push through. And so I had this relentless pursuit of just trying to get a little bit better at communicating and a public atmosphere, in a high-pressure atmosphere, getting mentors and people who could encourage me and influence me. And so it was a relentless pursuit because I just wanted to pay for school supplies. So it was an interesting motivation, but my why was big enough that I had to push through to figure it out.
Was it Simon Sinek that wrote, what is the title of that book?
It starts with why.
Something like, yeah. I've got it on Audible. I need to listen to it. I just got it the other day. So I have to ask, did this company or this gentleman, did he see beyond the nervousness and go ahead and buy the product?
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, he engaged us in many more products. He's an executive with a large company. He takes my call all the time. He trusts me.
Nice.
He just sees I'm an authentic person. I don't have that same nervousness around him anymore. Growing up a little bit since then. To answer your question a little differently, so that's the genesis of my experience. But along the way, there's still a degree of introverted attributes that I have to overcome in order to lead an organization. And those, my leadership is slightly different than maybe a more charismatic leader. For example, I have some charismatic leaders that I've been a part of. They really enjoy taking their employees and clients out to dinner, hosting parties, and all those things are really good. I don't do that frequently. I know it's important in building those relationships, but I really don't enjoy it. And so, you know, I have to do other things to be able to bridge the relationship gap inside my wheelhouse. And so those are just things that I have to do, some systems and processes and some intentionality.
I know what you're talking about. I'm in Louisiana, deep south. We're in the oil belt down here. And the biggest deals are made on the golf course or at somebody's fishing camp. I mean, that's just the way it's done. I mean, it's not unusual to walk into an office down on Highway 90, which is all oil field companies down there. Friday afternoon, you walk in and everybody's got their feet on a desk and there's a six-pack on the desk. They're doing business. They're not playing. They're actually conducting business. But if you're not accustomed to that, you're like, what the heck? But that's business.
It is, and that makes it difficult. I had an employee recently come to me and say, I'm leaving. I got a job offer to another company, and they decided to stay. But a part of the interviewing process was a wine and dine that I've never really done before, just because it's just not something I enjoy doing. I enjoy being around this particular person, really. I mean, I love him to death. If he said, you know, be at my house tonight, I need your help, I have an issue, I'd be there right away. Love his family, been there for him when his baby was born. But in terms of just going out and having dinner and wining and dining, you know, I'd rather him go and take his wife out to eat and might take my wife and just have intimate conversations with the people I love. So, but I almost lost him because of this intimate dinner. Now, when we came back to,
really?
When he came back, and yeah, so, but
you
when
have
we,
to explain
when,
that further.
The intimate dinner?
Yeah. I mean, why would you lose him because of that?
Well, that was the lead-in. He certainly had more money to offer, right?
Okay,
so,
gotcha.
Yeah. So I need to certainly make sure I'm clear there. So he offered more money than his current compensation, but there was an attractiveness to the wine and dine. But what was cool, here's what's cool, is that when I was able to get the offer, what his compensation closer in the ballpark to what this other company was offering, I think he reflected on the fact that I have an authentic, sincere appreciation for him and his family and his growth. And he came back to that and said, that's really what's important to me. And so I think authenticity and self-awareness for introverts and people who are a little reserved, I think over time that wins. I think there might be seasons and little moments where that six-pack of beer might win, but I think over time, give it a decade, I believe that the sincere, authentic behavior of somebody who really cares about other people wins out.
I agree with you. And honestly, when I look at the people in my life, and I have a very tight circle, as you can imagine. I have a lot of acquaintances, not a ton of friends. I have, one or two very, very close friends that I trust. And I keep it that way deliberately because honestly, that's all I can manage. But the truth is, I trust these people with my life, and they do the same. I mean, you just forge these relationships, and they do take time. But that's just the way it is. I mean, you understand over time that these people are somebody that you absolutely do want in your life, and you don't need to be around them every day or having a beer or, going to a barbecue or whatever it is that you do. They're your friends because of their character. And that works for me.
Me too. And I think a lot of people out there as well.
So when you crafted this business plan, did you take into account how you operate with people and how you operate in functions and in groups. Did you take all this into, you had to have taken it into consideration when you put forth your business model in your head, right?
Yeah, to a certain degree, it evolves over time because I never really anticipated the business growing as much. But it has, by the grace of God. What's happened over time is I've had to certainly surround myself with people with different personality qualities, right? Character qualities. That's important because there's certain skill sets that I can't provide. I've got an employee who's an incredible communicator, and he MCs a lot of our events, and then I go up and say a few words as a leader, and then he's just facilitating the whole event. I need people like that, so I don't think I need to be concerned about him being better than me. I just realized that we're just very compatible. So I think just over time, you just start to build the business and realize where your gaps are. Another thing that I do each month is I just take an inventory. If I make sure that I had dialogue with all the employees, because I could certainly just kind of cuddle in my corner and work my tail off and not just meet with the employees just in a very casual manner and just say, how's life? How's your family? I could actually go a whole month and miss those conversations and not think about it. Not that I don't care about them, but just I just get focused, right? And so I actually have a checklist to make sure that I at the end of the month I didn't miss anyone, because I'm prone to do that. So there's certain things that
I
I think
love
you
that you
do.
said that because I have the same thing. It's not that I don't care about my team. I have this great team of web developers and virtual assistants, and it's not that I don't care about them. I'm in daily communication with most of them. But I have to be very mindful about saying, hey, down here in the South, hey, how's your mom and them? I have to be very mindful of getting personable with them. Otherwise, I just forget. And it's not that I don't
Yeah.
appreciate them or like them. It's just for me, I'm focused on business. And once I'm done with that, I'm off to something else. And, I'm just very logical and linear, not particularly emotional, day-to-day contact. And I have to make sure that I connect with them on a personal level. And I found that sad for the longest kind of time, but then I realized, well, it's a tool. It's a tool to remind me to connect with them. They appreciate it. I actually enjoy it. And then we're back off to the races.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what's happened with me, to answer your question. You make a great point. We do have to get off to the races in terms of back into what we're doing, and we We have to be careful. I want to make two quick points. We have to be careful as in our personality qualities is to not be so focused on stress relieving activities that we forget or overlook or discount the power of goal achieving activities. So I've always asked myself, is this a stress relieving activity or goal achieving activity? And a stress relieving activity may be something that's fun. Let's say I'm looking at images on Canva because I want to do a new marketing campaign, or I'm on Fiverr or whatever. That's fun and it's stress relieving and it's in my wheelhouse, but it's really not moving
Pinterest.
The puck.
Yeah. I go to Pinterest, it's like Disneyland.
Yeah, exactly. And so in some people it's Excel spreadsheets, whatever it is. And so we have to ask ourselves, really, is this a goal achieving or stress relieving activity? And I think that authentic questioning needs to be very real, because there are times when we're just in that place justifying what we're doing. But in reality, it would be better served if we took a break away and just spend a few minutes with somebody who we need to spend some time with.
Right. And you said something when we were talking in our pre-interview, which I really wish we had recorded. It was such a great interview. Your faith plays a great role in your work and how you have overcome adversity. Do you mind talking about that?
Oh, and how I've overcome adversity?
Well, your faith and how it's helped you.
Oh, yeah, sure, certainly. So when you have a why you do something, or the cause of what the reason you're doing something is because you don't want to fail, or because you don't want to go back to the lifestyle that you had in the season of growing up, maybe financial constraints and just a challenging family dynamic. You just don't want that anymore. And so that's so important to you, that when you have that focus, you tend to put a lot of stress on yourself. And that's what I did for me. I was so focused on not failing that I found myself dealing with a lot of pressure. And the pressure really started when I couldn't play sports anymore. You know, my body was starting to get a little bit older, and I enjoyed playing basketball and football. But I was just getting older, and I couldn't do the things I used to do. So I decided to take up golf, and I didn't just embarrass me. I embarrassed others. That game just wasn't for me. And then
no.
I decided to go.
I do not understand chasing a little white ball all over acres and acres. I just don't get it. It's like, just pick it up, put it in the hole, go home. I don't get it.
Putt-putt. I'll do putt-putt. How's that? But at the time, then I decided to jog. And so I'm jogging at a conference in California, and I get lost. I was going for an early morning jog, and I get lost. I didn't have my cell phone, so I'm late for the conference. I ended up jogging 12 miles. I never jogged 12 miles before, but I was lost. And so I finally found my way back with some help from some people. And late for the conference, and I get back, and I had pressed the wrong button on a trade that we had done. We moved people's money, and I just messed up, and I lost the guy $10,000, and I was never going to get that back. And he had a beard and guns, and he was not happy. And so I was just frustrated. There was just a lot of...
I didn't mean to laugh. Sorry. Beard and guns.
he did. And so I was just kind of frustrated. So it's a February day, and I'm going to take my daughter to the grocery store. She's two at the time. My wife, who's expecting our third child, is going to stay home with our son and rest, and I'm going to get some groceries. So I take my daughter up to the grocery store a few miles up the road, and we're in a little SUV, and she's in her car seat in the back. She's two. We roll down the windows because it's a beautiful February day. It's like sunglasses and leather jacket kind of day. And she had kicked the electronic button up with her foot, and she stuck her finger between the window and the frame, and it was stuck there. And so I didn't know how to get it out. I tried to push the button down, but it was stuck. So I swerved over and I cut off some people. And in the McDonald's parking lot, she lets go of her foot and the window comes down and her finger was severed. And there's blood all over her princess dress. It was just
hanging
on there by the skin.
Poor daddy.
So I know. And so I rush over to the hospital, which was about a mile away. And the doctor successfully reattached her finger that night, Dr. Chris Phelps. not without pain and anxiety, obviously, but my wife also lost the baby that night. And so in the midst of all this,
you were having a bad day just doesn't cover it.
Yeah. And this all this kind of collectively happened over a few weeks. Actually, it sounds like it all happened over a day, but I was, my identity as a father, a husband, a person, an athlete, a business guy. It was all really, really becoming a difficult thing. And my attitude in life, because I was so focused, was mental toughness, extra effort. MTXE is what I used to say. And I couldn't MTXE my way out of this. So I call a guy up, and his name's Bill Lovelace, and he had a little gray hair, and he had run a business before, and he had read the Bible a little bit more than me. So I call him up, and I said, look, here's the deal. Can we wrestle with this over a cup of coffee and a breakfast taco? And so we sat down, and he listened to me, and I don't remember what he said. But I remember as though God spoke through him, and God said, are you done yet? Are you done living the life I never intended you to live? And it was at that point that I realized that the anxiety and pressure that I was putting on myself, I was not living something called the abundant life. And I was just completely setting myself up for a heart attack at a very young age. So it was at that moment I made a commitment to really buy what Jesus was selling. And one of the scriptures that really resonated in our conversation was, it was John 15:5. And at the end of that, it says, apart from me, you can do nothing. And so it was in that moment I started to really appreciate really what it meant to be a Christian and become dependent upon God in each moment of my life, not to trust him more, not to put all the pressure on me, but just to be dependent on him moment by moment. And I made that commitment about 6 years ago, and I will tell you that was one of the best commitments I've ever made as a business owner and as a man and as a father and a husband. And as a result, my life's different. I certainly have pressure and fear, but it doesn't stay very long. I just continue to depend on God in each moment, each circumstance, and that's freedom.
And you said something so important about the abundant life. I mean, I, for one, do not believe that we were put on this earth to experience chronic hardship. I don't buy it. But I think we create a lot of our own hardship without question.
Yeah, we certainly do. I think some of the biggest challenges, even what I read today, and you know, I'm at a conference right now, actually in a conference, and speaking with you with the conference going on in the other room. And you know, we get messages of how to be a better person and how to, you know, there's a checklist of 5 things to do to be a better husband, a better wife, a better leader. And here's the 5 things to do to be a better leader. Here's the 5 things to breathe better. Here's the 5 things to work out better. And you start adding up all these checklists, and it's just overwhelming. And so we become more self-reliant than ever before, and that's actually putting more pressure on us and actually separating us from the life God intended us to lead, which was to be dependent upon him. And so I'm very careful about taking advice. I always filter it through the context of, is this independent of Christ, or is this in Christ? And so that's kind of my filter for advice now.
You know, I look at the Ten Commandments as a primer for good living. Always have. I mean, it just makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And so, yeah, the Ten Commandments are
basic
timeless principles.
That's
they
right.
are. They are. Yeah, and then Christ comes along and he says, I didn't come to abolish that. He says, I came to fulfill it. And so I kind of like how those two are tied together. So you make a good point.
Yeah. I tend to kind of follow along. There are one or two that, you know, I'll send on Twitter every now and then, but you do what you got to do. But here's the thing. When you take that burden off of yourself, however you're going to do it, whether it's through, you know, faith, whether it's through meditation, whatever it's going to be, things kind of fall back into place, I find. Because you're not so hard on yourself. I think it was Pam Grout. She wrote the book, E Squared, I believe it was called. And she said something so important, and it has stuck with me. I've listened to the book a couple of times, and she said basically, and I have to paraphrase, that every breath is a prayer. And I believe that. So you might as well think good thoughts, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's a great point, because that's pretty much what I mentioned. You know, it's very much aligned with what I had mentioned moment by moment, and so you could really say the same thing in each breath. I think that's important, because a lot of times we think about our relationship and our spirit in terms of long term, a month, a week, a year, today I'm going to do this, but it's just in the moment that really counts.
That's right, because we don't know what's going to happen in the next moment. I mean, you can be walking along. I do something I call segment intending. And, you know, I'm going to say, okay, for the next 15 minutes, I'm going to work on this particular page on this website. Ooh, squirrel. Or I'm picking up the cat and dancing in the kitchen. So, you know, go moment by moment and enjoy it, but be aware of it. I mean, I've had to learn to be very, very aware. To be honest with you, Daryl, I've had to train myself to live in the moment. It's been very difficult for me.
Oh,
and I
still
struggle a bit with that.
There's no doubt that's such a challenge, and you know, in a world where we're so motivated to accomplish stuff, that it's really hard to enjoy the moment. My wife has to even tell me, "Hey, you need to just enjoy the moment and stop thinking about the five things you need to do." And that's
exactly.
Really, really tricky. Yeah.
And I find, too, you know, we're back to introverts here, but I find that as for me, I'm a high-functioning workaholic. And I'm not saying that with, you know, as a prideful thing. It's not a good thing. I need to learn to relax. And I think most of us do. It's hard to do.
I agree. And rest is so important. Every morning when I get up, the first thing that I do is I actually am still. And again, in my faith is really important to me, and God says in the scriptures, be still and know. I think there's something powerful about that. So I take that pretty seriously. And so it can be 10 minutes or an hour, but I'm still. And that's an important part. I was talking with an entrepreneur the other day, very successful one, and he mentioned that once a year he gets away for a week and he's just in stillness in nature. And I think that's so good. But here's the deal. You have to do that. That's necessary to do that once a year if you're not doing it daily. I think you really just need to. We just need to be still once a day, and just and for me, it's being in the presence of God and hearing Him. And I think that's really a character quality, a habit that's overlooked by a lot of people.
Now, Daryl, when you say still, what does that mean to you? What does that look like? Because I've tried meditation. It does not work. I fall over and drool, or I start making a grocery list in my head. It doesn't work for me. But when I'm still, I'm concentrating on my breathing, because that's the only thing I can really think about is just deep breathing, in, out, gratitude, in, out, gratitude. That's the only way I can be still. So I would love for you to share what that time of stillness means to you and how you do it. I mean, if that's not too personal.
No, it's great. I you know, I'll just express what I believe, and everyone who's listening can, you know, take it or chunk it. But so what I do, the first thing I do is when I sit down it's one prayer, and it's God, draw me close to you in this moment. And in Galatians, Paul, who was at one time a complete hater of Christians, his life was transformed. And in Galatians, I think it's 5:27, he says our spirit, his spirit, God's spirit, testifies with ours. And so it's mentioned several times that there's a interconnection between God's spirit and our spirit. So there's some validation for me that there's a need to just let that connection happen. And so it's in the stillness and the quiet that connection happens many times. And it can happen in relationships, but in the stillness it happens to me a lot. And so my first thing that I do is to say, God, draw me close to you. And then in that moment, I'm still. Yes, I'm breathing. I have thoughts that race. That's a part of it. That's just how we're all wired. To get in this habit, I used to, you know, as soon as I'd get a thought, I'd write it down. I've gotten a little bit better now where I don't have to write things down. But that would get that thought off my mind, and I just have a little log of just thoughts. But now I'm still for 10 minutes. I've been still for an hour, and then at that point, I will I'll read some scripture for about 10 minutes, an hour. Just, you know, I don't really have a timeline on that, and then I'll find one scripture in there where I'll just study that, like just really just every word, and just and then at the end, I'm thanking God for that moment, and I'm praying for people that are hurting or hungry, and then my day started off right.
And I
was going
to ask
you about
that.
That's my process.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm going to try something like that because I'm not very good at still. I'll be honest, I struggle with it. What I have learned to do is when I first wake up in the morning, because I'm one of those people that I open my eyes, I hit the floor running, the devil says, oh, crap, she's awake. You know, I'm just one of those obnoxious people. You don't want to spend time in a hotel room with me if you are, you know, you need a pot of coffee first thing in the morning. I have a sister who's like, oh, hey, nope, get her own room. No, I'm not sleeping in a room with her. But I've had to train myself to just stay in bed. And I stretch because I think that's one thing that people forget to do. We don't know how to stretch anymore. And I stretch as much as I can. And I'm stretching honestly up to heaven. And I'm saying, thank you. I woke up today. Thank you. It's a great new day. And that kind of gets my day going. It's just that stretch and the breathing and just absolute gratitude. It's like, oh, man, I got another day. Woohoo! And off I go.
Yeah, that's great. You know, that and the physical part of it's, you know, we've got the soulical part that we have to work out, and then we've got that physical part. I'll mention a little bit about the physical part for just a second. The soulical part is way, way, way underrated. I say anybody, but most of the people, I think we just need to take inventory as collectively as humans that we, many people desire to and are searching for something. And so there's a clearly a need for our soul and our spirit to rest. But to talk about the physical part, the stretching is so important. The breathing is so critical. I do Israeli martial arts, which is Krav Maga. That's so important in my life. If I don't do it, my wife tells me, you need to go punch something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important that we have that balance. But I do want to make sure that, because we hear so much and it's such a, you know, CrossFit so important and stretching so important, we hear that about the physical side so much, but I don't want to discount the soulical side. That's equally, or if not more important.
I agree. It took me the longest kind of time to figure it out. And that leads me to my next question for you. Is like, once you, I mean, you had all of these things happen in your life that were not good, and you kind of broke down and said, okay, I'm ready to do something different. I need help. I need guidance. And you got the guidance. Where did your business go from there? Where was your business before, and where was your business after?
So yeah, that's a really good question because I don't like to answer, but I am going to.
Oh, I'm sorry. We can go on to something else.
No. I will answer it. I don't offer that, and you'll hear why. Because my business is absolutely outstanding, and it just rocked. I mean, I can't even tell you the growth rate. It was ridiculous. I mean, it was several 100% growth. And so, but here's the deal. I don't want somebody to imply that their relationship with Jesus is going to give them prosperity. That's the last thing I want to.
Right. And that's not what I was asking. I was just asking, I think, how did you feel differently? How was your business? Because you are the business, right? How
that's
did it
right.
all kind of play out after you decided to be a different person? I probably phrased it badly.
Yeah, the thing about it is that I actually started applying very biblical principles to my business and to my own life. In fact, if you think about it, so now I'm abiding in Christ. I'm trusting Him. I'm not leading in fear anymore or insecurity or anxiety. I'm leading in hope and trust. Well, people thrive when leadership is filled with hope and trust and not fear and anxiety. So to be quite candid with you, my relationship with Christ was, that was really the catalyst for a very successful business because I started to change the way I behaved. I don't know if that works for everyone, but it just really rocked my business. And we've become one of the best places to work in our city for several years in a row, and it's a direct result of a leader that's aligned himself with Christ.
Now, when employees come in, do they understand this, or is it something that just kind of dawns on them over time? I can't imagine that, you know, I'm picturing this scenario where you say, okay, you have to belong to Church of Christ or you can't work here. I can't even see like, that is not right. And I know you
no.
do that. So how do how do people understand, or do they just kind of, well, let me back myself up a second here. I believe that leaders should lead by example and not by exhortation, and I firmly believe from listening to you that that's how you lead. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're dead on. Absolutely. We don't have any little fishes on our cards, or we don't. Yeah, I mean, we don't go out and tell people we're a Christian company. That's just not what we do.
Okay.
But to answer
but
your question,
people do understand. I mean, after a while, they're like, you know, whether they believe or don't believe, they understand that it's so beneficial for them, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, when we bring people on, we definitely honor the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That's important, and we stay abreast of those changes in the civil rights laws. That we don't want to compromise those. We want to respect the law, and we also want to respect other people's differing opinions, and vice versa. As a small business, we need to ensure that because the business is an extension of my belief system, that I'm not forced to change my belief system because of somebody who wants to work here. So the way we do it is it's a mutual respect when we bring somebody on board. We tell them, look, we do pray around here. That's just a part of our culture. You'll find some people stepping aside and praying. And if that's uncomfortable for you, you might not enjoy your job here, but you're absolutely welcome to work here. That's not a precursor. I just want to give you that heads up. And so so that's our culture. And so we've never had any issues with it. Everyone's been, we have people that aren't of faith. We have people of different religions. But I think it's very respectful, mutually respectful. I don't force a hand on anybody.
So your leadership style is really what is growing your company. I mean, basically you are allowing people to be who and what they need to be, but you are leading from the top.
Yeah, I would. it'd be hard for me to say yes to that because I've surrounded myself with so many good people that have made me look good. But I appreciate it regardless.
Well, I've read up about you and I've listened to other interviews with you, and that's my take on it. Now, I don't work with you, I don't work for you, but that's what I'm seeing, so there it is. Okay, so we've got so many questions and we're running out of time. We've got about 7 minutes, so let's see what we can do. I'm getting impatient.
Hey, have me back on. We'll do it again.
I will. You will come back?
Yeah, we can do it. You know, in fact, my book's not even available until January, so maybe when my book comes out and we can do it again.
I would love for that because I just went ahead and pre-registered for the book, by the way. And before we end the show, I want you to tell people where they can get a copy of the document that you put up there for them, 30 Small Business Startups, I think it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
30 Small Business Startup Mistakes. I just downloaded it. Okay, so let's kind of go back to, I guess a recap is that you had a good business. Your business just went from strength to strength after you decided to change who you are and how you deal with your faith and, you know, how you accepted faith. Is there anything else that happened along that time that might make this story just different? Or, you know, were there any big successes? Were there any big failures? What kind of happened along that road?
So, there was, it's kind of crazy because, you know, a lot of luck happened. And I know luck. You know, I just told you I'm a man of faith, and I'm saying luck happened. I'm just using that because the word's easy. Hmm. And for lack of a better term, luck happened, right? And luck is really, in the Christian circles, it's grace, which is unmerited favor. And in the secular world, in the business world, it's defined where opportunity and preparation collide. Well, however you define it, whether it's a secular business or spiritual, I'm just going to use the word luck. A lot of luck happened. And so people came wanting and desperate to work for us. People I've worked with 10 years ago came knocking on the door saying, can I work here? And I was fair to them. I told them what I could do and what I couldn't do. I've paid fair. I've tried to be transparent. But the people that we brought in our team, I couldn't have imagined that they would ever want to work for me. These people are talented. And so that has happened. And that's been probably the collective biggest impact on our organization is the people that we brought in here. We certainly have had to get the people off the bus, but the people that are on the bus are special. And so that's what's happened over the last 6 or 7 years that's made us different.
Now, how did you come to be endorsed by Dave Ramsey, who, by the way, I love, and Dan Miller? How did that happen?
So Dave Ramsey's endorsed our company for about 10 years. We were one of the first endorsed local providers in his ELP system.
Mm-hmm.
And we've mutually had a respect for each other, and he believed what I believe, not only from a business perspective, but also from a financial perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Long-term savings, not speculative investing, things like that.
Pay your house off. What does he say, that paid-off house is the new Lamborghini or whatever it is?
Mercedes, exactly.
It's
we're paid-off house. Yeah, paid-off house replaces the BMW. So all that stuff we buy into. And then Dan Miller, I met a few years ago. I joined his mastermind group, built a relationship with him. He's a great guy. Mm-hmm. And then, and so those two relationships have been important to me, and certainly a handful of other, I would say celebrity type people have come up in my life. And I tell my wife, it's kind of funny how, I have cell phone numbers of people that were my role models when I was a kid. And that's kind of just weird, for me even today, but I enjoy it. And basically I don't ever solicit for business, from them, but I do get, I do get a lot of wisdom from them, so I appreciate and respect those relationships.
I can well imagine. And you said something, again, that's very important, and it's masterminds. And I talk a lot about this with people who are, small business owners, entrepreneurs, virtual assistants, whatever they are. I think it's very, very important to commune, so to speak, with other business minds and with other minds, period. Particularly being an introvert, it's hard to get out. I don't coffee clutch. I would rather be hit by a truck than go have coffee. I just don't want to do it. But, masterminds and, groups like that, I'm in. And I will pay whatever it takes because, that's where like meets like and minds meet minds. And, you always learn something new and you can share something new. So apparently masterminds and mentors and coaching is very important to you as well.
Yeah, it is. They've become family to me. C12 is a national organization of business owners that I'm a part of, and Dan Miller's Mastermind Group. I have an industry-specific group of people, and I think because our cause is all the same and our mission is all the same, it makes it easy to meet with them because we have a common dialogue. I was in a fraternity in college, and that was the oddest thing for me to be in because the cause wasn't that, there wasn't much cause there, and so it was really hard to build relationships. I did build some great ones that are still today, but if you imagine when I was in a group of people where the cause was really weak, it makes it hard to just build relationships. But when you get in an organization that the cause is really align with what you want to do in life, then as an introvert, it's not that difficult.
No, it's really not. Now, I need to ask you this. Do you do any coaching or mentoring? I'm sure people approach you all the time if you don't.
They do. And at this season of my life, I have 4 kids that I coach and mentor, and my focus
is
there.
There you go. That makes sense. Listen, we're 55 seconds away. I have so enjoyed having you on the program today, and I really do want you to come back. But in the meantime, where can people find you on the web?
So I do have that ebook for your listeners, and they can go to smallbusinessbigpressure.com. That's my website. Put in /mistakes. Actually, at the very end of the URL, put /mistakes. There's an ebook there. It's really cool. It's 30 small business startup mistakes. It usually costs money. But for your listeners, I have a code in there. If they put in dentist, they'll get it for free. And the reason I put in there is because you just had work done.
I did. I had dental surgery on Wednesday. And I'm not a big sleeper. Most workaholics don't sleep a whole lot. From Wednesday to Thursday, I slept for 20 hours. My back still hurts. I slept and I slept and I slept. As I woke up, and went, ow, it wasn't my mouth that hurt, it was my back. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I'm caught up for the year, I think. I don't think I need to nap anymore until maybe December.
Maybe just stretch now.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Okay, so repeat that one more time if you don't mind, and I will go back and amend the show notes so people can find it.
Yeah, no problem. smallbusinessbigpressure.com/mistakes, and the ebook code is dentist.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Now, where can people find your podcast?
So I'm my business exploded. And so I had no time to do my Financial Mythbusters podcast anymore. So I shut it down. Not that it wasn't getting traction, but that's okay. I had just to get real focused. And so for now, they can just find me out. I do plenty of interviews all across the country. So they can Google me and find me plenty of places.
Yeah, you're everywhere. Daryl, thank you so much for being with me here. I mean, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. And honestly, I am going to practice just sitting still. It's difficult for me, and I'm going to practice it. I promise you I am.
Good. Next time I'll...
I'm going to try not to write my Thanksgiving grocery list when I'm doing it.
No. Yeah, next time we talk, I'll see how it's coming along.
Yeah, ask me about that. No, seriously. I'm laughing because I know it's going to be difficult. But, you know, I really do need to learn how to do that. Stilling my mind chatter, I think, is the biggest problem for me. It always has been. But I have to, and I wanted to talk to you the next time we talk, too, and this is not a woo-woo subject. I want to talk to you about intuition and following your gut, because I think that's something that we all do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that comes with faith as well, doesn't it? You know, just follow your gut. I don't know about you. I hear, I'll be in the shower or I'll be somewhere, and I'll hear a voice say, and this is how I know it's not me speaking. This is going to sound really odd, but... When I'm speaking to myself in my own head, we all do it. I see the eyebrows raising, but we all do it. When I say I'm going to do something, that's my ego speaking. But when I hear myself thinking we are going to do this, I know good and well it's somebody else helping me. Do you have
And unpacking that is worth another show, because there's certainly a lot to say about that. Yeah.
It's important, and it took me the longest kind of time to figure out that there was an I and then there was a we, and we is always right. I is my ego. My ego gets in the way all the darn time. So
I tend to listen to we.
Yeah, there you go. Well, listen, Daryl, thank you so much. And everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Daryl Lyons, and I will see you next week. Daryl, thank you.
You're welcome.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeonthewebcom or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.